Hello and welcome back to the Thinking Jew podcast, where we dive deep into Torah and Jewish philosophy, always discovering new layers of depth to Judaism we didn't know existed beforehand. I'm your host, Rabbi Moshe Siegel, coming to you from Richardson, Texas, and I have a really important topic that I want to really dive into today, and that is the role of the rabbis in defining and adapting Torah law. So this podcast really comes from an amazing question that I received in response to episode 16, in which we discussed the sin of the golden calf. And although you don't have to have listened to that to enjoy today's episode, if you want to gain a more complete understanding of the golden calf and the fundamental ideas attached to it, definitely a worthwhile listen to go check out after this, episode 16. The main idea that we mentioned that I'm going to expand on today was that the sin of the Jews in the golden calf wasn't so much that they left God for an idol. In actuality, the Jews had altruistic motives and a genuine desire to connect to God when they constructed the golden calf. But they erred in that they took the law into their own hands. Their mistake was that they wanted to call the shots in how to connect to God, rather than allowing God himself to set those terms. And the question that I received about this was, what exactly did the Jews do wrong? Doesn't the Torah give the power to the rabbis to interpret and apply Torah law as necessary? Let me just explain a little bit. You may be familiar with the concept of the written law and the oral law, meaning God gave Moses on Mount Sinai the five books of the Chumash, the written Torah, and he also gave Moses an accompanying oral law used to interpret the written law. In Hebrew, we refer to this as Torah Sheba'al Peh is the oral law, and Torah Shebichsav is the written law. And there's really no mitzvah in the Torah which is completely understandable without the oral law. For example, how do you know where to put a mezuzah on the doorpost? Or how do you know which verses to include in the mezuzah in the first place? Or what instrument do we blow on Rosh Hashanah? Which actions are prohibited on Shabbos? The Torah hints to these concepts and gives us a general idea of mitzvahs, but the actual explanation and practical way of doing it is really all contained in the oral law. And the way we know that the Torah gave that over to the rabbis to apply it and interpret it is actually an explicit verse in the Torah, and it says in Deuteronomy 17, verse 10, V'asisa al pi hadavar asher yagidu lecha, and you shall do as the rabbis instruct you, min ha-makom ha-hu asher yivcha Hashem, from the designated place that Hashem will choose in Jerusalem, referring to the highest Jewish court, the Sanhedrin, v'shamarta la'asos kechol asher yarucha, and you shall be cautious to do everything that they tell you. And the next verse continues this and says, al pi ha-torah asher yarucha, according to the instructions that they give you, v'al ha-mishpat asher yomru lecha ta'asa, and the judgment that they tell you to do, Lo sasser min hadavar asher yagidu lecha yamin u'smol. You should not veer from what the rabbis tell you, not right or left. So the Torah itself tells us that we should follow the interpretations of the rabbis as to know exactly what to do. So here's the million-dollar question that I was asked about the golden calf. And that is, if the consensus of the rabbis at that time was that a golden calf is a valid way to connect to God, then why was it wrong? Don't the rabbis have the power to interpret and apply the Torah? And this question really opens up a very fundamental discussion about the above verse, and that is, what power did the Torah give to the rabbis to interpret and adapt the Torah? Can the rabbis just get up and change whatever they want in the Torah, say it doesn't apply anymore? So there's an explicit verse in the Torah also prohibiting anyone from adding or subtracting anything in the Torah itself. So what exactly is the leading sage's role in adapting and applying Torah law? There's another two similar laws that I've been asked about over the years that share, I think, a certain common denominator with this question. And at first glance, they also may mistakenly imply that the rabbis have the ability to change Torah law, but we'll take a deeper look at them and understand them and see that that's not really exactly what's going on. So the first one of these laws is the law referred to as Shmitas Ksafim. The Torah discusses in Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse 1 and 2, the laws of the sabbatical year, referred to as Shemitah in the Torah. The more famous concept of the Shemitah, or the sabbatical year, is that once every 7 years, we're prohibited from working and developing the lands, and we have to let the land lay completely fallow. However, there's an additional aspect, and that is that anyone who lends money to his brother and he didn't yet pay him back, when the Shemitah comes, it wipes the debt clean and he can no longer collect the money. Now, historically, what evolved was the people that had money didn't want to lend money to the poor people that needed it once it got close to the sabbatical year out of fear that they weren't going to be able to collect. So the Talmud in Gittin, page 36a, teaches us that the great sage Hillel, seeing that people were not lending money anymore to the needy, created a concept called a prizbul, which was somewhat of a legal loophole to allow people to collect the money owed to them even after the sabbatical year. And the question that I've received before is, how is this possible? Doesn't it seem like he basically just got up and said, look, these laws aren't functioning anymore in society, people aren't lending, so we need to get rid of this concept in the Torah? I thought the rabbis don't have the ability to just change verses in the Torah. So that's obviously not what's happening here. But before we dive deep into that, I want to just ask the second example that's often asked to me, which is the laws of an Eruv. The Torah, as we know, it's hinted to in the verse in Exodus chapter 16, verse 29. The Torah prohibits one carrying outside in the public domain on Shabbos. As many of us know, if you live inside of an Eruv, the rabbis permit you to carry inside of an Eruv. So again, doesn't it seem like the rabbis went ahead and invented this concept of Eruv permitting one to carry after seemingly the Torah directly forbade such an action? So the answer to all these questions is no, that's not what's happening here. The rabbis do not have the ability to change anything written in the Torah explicitly. But before we go back to our three individual case studies of the golden calf, the laws of forgiving debt in Shemitah, and Eruv, let's start with understanding the general power given to the rabbis in the Torah, or basically really just what exactly is the concept of Torah Shebaal Peh, the concept of the oral law. The oral law given by God to Moses at Mount Sinai is a system of interpretation. Nowhere in the Torah does God give the rabbis the right to decide based on their own moral judgment or communal needs the ability to change anything in the Torah. The whole essence of Torah is that it's God's wisdom far beyond man, and our goal in Torah study is to try to understand God's wisdom as best as possible, but never, God forbid, to replace it with our own wisdom. Now, the Torah can't possibly write down every permutation of every case that's going to ever happen in Jewish law across thousands of years of history. So what God did was he gave over a God-developed system along with the written law and gave that system over to the rabbis, with their role being to delve into Torah as deeply as possible and then use this God-given system to interpret and apply the will of God to practical cases of everyday living. But the important point to take away from here is that it's a system of interpretation, and the system of interpretation was also given by God. Meaning, the rabbis can't change the law based on their own motivation or what they view as being the needs of the community unless they can explain it within God's system of interpretation. There are certain processes that God allows the rabbis to use to apply Torah law, and that does create a certain element of flexibility and variety amongst the interpretations of the rabbis. But there's also a clearly defined limit to the system, and no rabbi can create their own rules or arbitrarily change Torah law. If you're curious and you want to see an example of what this system looks like, you can find a simplified version of it in the morning services. It's actually a paragraph called Rabbi Yishmael Omer. And like all the sources quoted here on this podcast, if you'd like to look them up inside, they're linked in the episode details below. So with this background of the role of the rabbis and their ability to interpret in mind, let's go back to our three case studies. Firstly, the golden calf. So like we explained in episode 16, this was exactly the problem of the golden calf. God commanded the Jews a few days earlier at Sinai to not make any graven images, and the rabbis can't change that, even for the most altruistic reason. So since there's no possibility within the system of interpretation that can possibly justify creating a golden calf, the Jews are held accountable for moving the law from God's domain into their own, which is what Rav Hirsch, as we mentioned in episode 16, defined as a form of idolatry. Now let's go to the second case study. the case of Prosbul, the enactment of Hillel to allow debt collection after the sabbatical Shemitah year. So first, to understand a little better what exactly a Prosbul does, what it does is it transfers ownership of your debt collection from the individual person to the Jewish courts. Since the verse says that any debt which you have from your brother shall be forgiven, the law of debt forgiveness only applies between two Jews, but not between a Jew and the courts. So what Hillel instituted was a legal loophole that by transferring your personal debt to the court, the Torah would no longer prohibit you from collecting. Now you might be thinking right now, who cares? That's still problematic. How could Hillel just find a loophole that inherently is accomplishing something that the Torah explicitly expresses it doesn't want to happen? The Torah clearly wants personal loan forgiveness. So even if you technically found a loophole out of it, doesn't it seem like it's against what the Torah wants? And that's an amazing question. And the Talmud itself, in Gittin, again, 36a, actually asks this question. How can it be possible that if the Torah doesn't want loans to be forgiven, that we can create this system of collecting loans after Shemitah? And the Gemara answers this in the name of Abaye. And he says that Hillel only enacted this in his time and forward, in which the laws of the sabbatical year were rabbinic in nature. Meaning, in the Torah, the sabbatical year only applies when the majority of Jews are living in the land of Israel and they're also celebrating the Jubilee year. Once that reality is no longer true, biblically speaking, there's no obligation of Shemitah. However, the rabbis were concerned that we would completely forget the laws of Shemitah and what they look like. So the rabbis enacted a rabbinic Shemitah, a rabbinic sabbatical, mimicking the biblical one, in order that this mitzvah be remembered. And Hillel, when he created this concept of Prosbul, he only created it within this rabbinic sabbatical year. And since the whole creation of this is rabbinic in nature, the rabbis do have the ability to define the terms of their Shemitah memorial and only include part of the biblical laws, which was enough to serve as a memento. But during a time period in which the laws of the sabbatical year are biblical, of course the rabbis don't have any right to remove that law. So we see clearly in this case as well that Hillel did not have the power to change any biblical law. He only created a legal loophole within a law that was already rabbinic in the first place. Lastly, let's discuss Erev. Here too, we find that same concept. The rabbis can never permit something that the Torah prohibits. Biblically, one cannot carry from a public domain to a private one. A public domain is defined by the Torah as a place where at least 600,000 people cross that space daily. So most of what we colloquially refer to as a public domain isn't actually categorized as a public domain by the Torah's definition. Now the rabbis were again concerned that since the masses view these areas as public areas, if people can carry there, they'll come to carry in actual biblical public domains. So the rabbis again created an enactment prohibiting carrying even in those domains. Now within these rabbinic areas, the public domains that have less than 600,000 people in them, the rabbis built in the permissibility of an Erev. This is why you'll never find an Erev crossing a major highway or any super busy area, because since too many people do cross that area, you actually cannot build an Erev there. So again, the whole concept of using an Erev to carry only exists in a domain that's inherently rabbinically problematic in the first place. And since it's rabbinic in the first place, they have the power to define the terms of it. So I know we discussed a lot of information on today's episode. And as always, if you have any questions or other case studies that you're wondering about how this applies to, always feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me at thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com. Before we sign off, let's just run through a one-minute summary to put everything together here. The Torah was given from God through Moses at Mount Sinai, and it was given with an oral law, which is a system of interpretation that's basically a set of rules governing how to interpret and apply the Torah. Within the system, there is some room for personal interpretation. There's different ways of interpreting, but it still has to fit within the guidelines and rules of the system. And the system never allows for a direct opposition to something written in the Torah itself. And the few places where we do find that it seems like the rabbis invented something or did something that opposes the Torah, when you look at it deeper, it's actually just an exception to the rabbinic safeguard that they themselves instituted. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Thinking Jew podcast. If you found this interesting, informational, hit the like button, leave a rating, subscribe, and help other people discover this podcast as well. Again, as always, if you have any questions, comments, or topic requests, you can always reach me at thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com.